You are listening to a sermon by Tim DeKalb, recorded on Sunday, January 14th, 2024, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
So, thanks, Janice, and well, good to see everybody this morning. I recognize a lot of last names from my Mennonite travels, and even one that I have a relationship related to. So there you go. I am also. When I pastored at Grandview, we had a lot of Mennonite folk that were part of the church, and I always took pleasure in them saying that we were more Mennonite than some of the Mennonite churches they went to, so that made me feel good as a Baptist pastor. I'm also privileged in October to have Chan speak at our conference around reimagining home, and got to meet Caleb and some other members of Chan's family, and Chan did a great job telling the story of his own family's journey of living with others, and really appreciated what he had to say. I want to speak to you today about this topic of what is the one of the primary actions of God in the scriptures, and that's the welcome of God. From beginning to end, the Bible tells a story about God welcoming us to the divine table and into the circle of divine love. And I know that Mennonites have done well at fostering a shared life together over the years, and I know some of you are doing that presently. And for a few moments today, I want to explore that vision of God's lavish welcome. And then I want to tell you some stories about Grandview's attempts to live into that welcome and to flesh it out. And not so that you'll do everything we did. I certainly don't want you to make all the mistakes we did in 30 years. But I hope that it will stir your imagination to consider what it means to extend and receive and extend the welcome of God today. I know our community was both stretched and humbled by this vision of God's hospitality, but it guided us for many years and has been important to me personally. So let's go to the first slide, just a reminder of the scripture that Elvira read for us this morning, part of it, that first part of the scripture in Luke 14. Here we see this extravagant welcome of God and just how extravagant it is. And so we read in that first slide, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers, your sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Now, I want to say right off the top here that I find this parable very challenging. I don't know about you, but Jesus' party instructions don't fit most of my party protocols. I mean, how often do you have these kind of parties where you invite those who don't get invited, who may not be easy guests? The parable exposes the difference between my parties and Jesus' parties in that way. One more preliminary point about this parable, I think it's important to capturing the meaning of it, is this, that Jesus' parties weren't just festive events pointing out what a good guy he was. In these gatherings, Jesus was signaling and enacting the reality that God was once again becoming king among his people. The meals were a sign that God was acting to fulfill this long promised vision of the Old Testament to restore his people, especially the poor and marginalized, and gather them around the table. If we went through the Bible and did a tour through the Bible, we would see a number of passages. I'm just going to point out a few. One is that passage that Paul read about in Hebrews, referring to Abraham's welcome of strangers and the turning out to be messengers of God. Or we find this alternative vision of God's welcome when we come to the festivals described in Deuteronomy, where the people were told to lay out the red carpet for, quote, the foreigners, the fatherless, and the widows living among you. Or we see it in the prophetic promises of Isaiah, for example, where he says in Isaiah 25, the Lord will make for all peoples a feast of rich food and well-aged wines. He will wipe away the tears from all faces and the disgrace of his people he will take away from the earth. Caleb, if you want to put that next slide up, this picture for me, I found it some years ago, and it for me kind of describes this picture of God's feast where people from all backgrounds are and situations in life find their place eating at God's table. So when Jesus moves throughout Palestine, throwing all these feasts with all the marks described in Deuteronomy and Isaiah, the reader should understand Jesus wasn't just throwing the best parties in town. He was inaugurating God's kingdom on earth. This was a sign that once again, God was becoming king. It's a sign of what the world will look like when God's desires are being lived out among us. What's also important about this is it highlights that how we eat together carries much significance. If we want to bear witness to God's kingdom, we best get ready to alter, shift our meal and party plans. Now, in Jesus' next parable that follows this one, it becomes clear that not everyone was willing to change their meal plans. In the parable of the great banquet, Jesus confirms that God's acting through these feasts and gatherings to enact these scriptural promises. But what the surprise is that not everyone is getting in on it. In the parable that follows, the people come up with all sorts of excuses and for why they couldn't be at this banquet. And listen to their excuses. The first man says he has to go back and check out a field that he bought. Biblical commentator Kenneth Bailey, who lived in Palestine for most of his life, said nobody in the Middle East would buy land without first going to check it out and to see quality of soil, availability of water, inclination towards the sunlight. It's just an excuse that this guy's given. And the second man is pretty similar. He informs the slave that he's purchased 5 oxen that he must now go put them to the test. The 5 oxen, again, in the Middle East at that time was a serious investment, sort of like buying 5 houses. And you wouldn't go buy those houses without at least seeing them on the internet today, that you would go see them, those 5 oxen, before you bought them, like buying 5 houses. The excuses offered are really not excuses, they're more of an insult than legitimate reasons for absence. So the third excuse is interesting because it is one that could have some credence, and that's the one about not being able to come because the man has just recently married. And the point here is that you know from scripture, you know that sometimes that first year of marriage was considered a time to have a break from some of the normal activities and responsibilities. And so it could have been a valid excuse. But even in the next story that follows, Jesus challenges the role of family in resisting the call of the kingdom. And so that excuse is an interesting one. So after all these known and respected folks turned down the invitation, the host sends out messengers to invite those typically not invited, strangers, even enemies. And Jesus' guest list reflects this parable today. He says, when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. The parable makes clear that the invited guests were missing out on what God was doing through Jesus. In Jesus, God was proclaiming good news to the poor, freedom to the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind. God was acting to fulfill these long ago promises, and it was reaching right to the edge of society. And while the most unexpected people were getting in, the ones expected were not there. I hope you're beginning to see the challenge of this parable today. God is doing something similar, I believe, in our cities today to bring the poor and to care for the poor and to release those oppressed. And so the question for us is, are we going to be part of God's welcome, or are we going to be with the bystanders watching on the outside? And how do we creatively take up this vision of God's welcome in a post-pandemic moment in a city that's facing an affordable housing crisis? Let me tell you some of the ways that we have tried to do that at Grandview over the 30 years, just to stir your imagination today. And what I want to do this morning is show you some pictures as well that might help you tell these stories. So let's go to the next slide, Caleb. One of the first things that we responses we made had to do with a community meal and overnight shelter. First called Out of the Cold, and then it was called Crossroads. And I like the name Crossroads because this meal became one of those what sociologists call third spaces. It wasn't public, it wasn't private, it was somewhere in between where strangers could meet in kind of a neutral space and get to know each other. One of those places where our lives cross paths with each other, where we cross socioeconomic boundaries and build trust together. It's one of those places strangers started becoming friends. And I think we need more of those kinds of spaces in our culture today. So for over 25 years, we had a meal with folks in our neighborhood who lived on or near the street, and that included overnight shelter during the colder months of the year. And it was really our neighbors who challenged us in this direction. I was at a meeting at a local gathering of people who worked in the neighborhood and social services, health, education. Somebody asked me, "Tim, what are the churches doing for the increasing number of homeless people on Commercial Drive?" And I said, "Nothing that I'm aware of." Brought that story back to our congregation on Sunday, and we met together in 6 months, did some planning, and 6 months later started our community meal. That meal was a place for people to develop relationships. Yeah, and let's go to the next place. So the next slide. Those relationships in turn challenged us to take further steps of welcome. And one of those was to welcome people into our homes, especially those who were more vulnerable. And that's when we started Salisbury Community Society. That started when we looked at a family in our church had a foundation that was looking at investing in housing, and we looked at buying a seniors home just up the street. And as it turned out, that place was going to require seismic upgrading if we changed the use to a community place. And so we used to joke that the urban planners didn't mind if it fell down on seniors. They didn't want it falling down on younger people. If you're in urban planning, you know it's not quite that simple. But we were saddened by that. And then we began to get this vision of forming community in houses adjacent to one another, in proximity to one another. And we started with the two houses next door to the church building, including the one you see here on your screen, that were owned by the church. And we established community homes in those places. This has been our own family's journey. As I mentioned, we've lived with 37 people over the last 25 years. And each time when we started this, it all kind of started by accident for us. There was a family from Ecuador that needed a place to stay. They stayed with us for a year and a half. And then we had a woman who was going through divorce and depression, needed a place to stay for a weekend, stayed a year and a half. And then a single mother who had a bad landlord that needed a place for a couple of weeks, and she stayed for a year and a half. So you can kind of see the trend here. I used to say that people lived with us for a year and a half, found out what we were really like, and then moved out. But of course, it wasn't that simple. It was actually a good experience of learning to love each other for who we really were. And all of those people have remained friends to us this day. Hospitality is, of course, mutual when it's healthy. It involves receiving as well as extending the welcome of God. Especially important is being welcomed into other people's homes. I experienced this reality when a group of refugees from Myanmar, formerly Burma, showed up at our church through connections we had with a local refugee agency. And some of these folks wanted to study the Bible, and the only night they wanted to study it was on Saturday. And I couldn't find anybody at the time to lead this Bible study, and I wasn't too excited about it because I was a Canucks fan, which was harder to be then than it is right this year. But I and it was Sunday before Sunday, so I wasn't that excited about it, but I decided to do it anyway. And we would meet, and it was a challenging group because there were two languages, both Karen and Burmese, And so I'd speak in English, somebody translate into Korean, somebody else into Burmese, take us about a half an hour to move through a couple verses in the Bible. And another difficult thing was they had a particular fish oil that did not agree with my stomach, and they had it every week, and tried to eat it, and it didn't work out so well. But every time I left that home, I felt newly alive. These folks had so little materially, and yet they were so grateful to God, for grateful to me for being there. And when I left that home, I almost felt like I had air in my lungs again. Eventually, some of those folks moved away, but other people got involved in that home group. And one of the people that the folks from Myanmar ended up being a pastor and continues to be a pastor today, welcoming many other folks from Burma. Receiving the hospitality of those whom you serve is part of how we affirm the welcome of God. Let's go to the next slide here. Talk about kin brace. Kin brace are two houses side by side where the bedrooms are always full. Kin brace began over 25 years ago when Lauren and Tamil Bliski had a dream of providing a home and support for refugee claimants. And kin brace is two houses side by side with 10 suites where refugee claimants, those making a claim for protection within our borders, are welcome to live as they go through their refugee claim and then and help to find more permanent housing if they get a positive determination. Over 500 people, some of the most vulnerable in our world, have found a landing spot and a welcome and home there. And there's now a group that I've helped form around churches working with refugee claimants and welcoming refugee claimants. We actually have a meeting coming up in February 3rd. And if you're interested in that, check out the CityGate website and you can find out more about that. Trying to find housing solutions for refugee claimants in our city. Last thing I want to tell you about is Cohere. Cohere is a project that was started quite a while ago. In the early 2000s, we purchased a lot adjacent to our surface parking lot in East Vancouver with the intention of moving what we had a drop-in center at the time. That didn't work out, began a long journey. These things take time, but eventually we ended up building this building. Cohere, called Cohere Community here. So, what does this project look like? Well, the Cohere project involves underground parking for the church, a floor of community space, which involved retaining a community garden. You can see a little bit of that in that picture. And the 26 units of housing structured in four hubs, where five or six units, independent units, form a common living room that is shared and helps to form very micro community. One reason I'm excited about this project is because I think it can be something of a model for other faith communities to motivate them to use their parking lots and underutilized land assets to build affordable housing in our city. Not only could affordable housing over parking lots change how we the housing narrative in our city, but it could also make a real bear witness to a different way of being the church in the city. I think there's an urgency for churches to consider how to use their land assets, not only to meet this crisis, but because some developers are seizing upon struggling churches to buy up their land and give them a new building in exchange for private development, and we lose most of this land for the public good. I really want to foster this kind of vision of churches using their land assets in a different way. In fact, let's go to the next slide there, Caleb. I'm hosting a conference around this very issue called Reimagining Church. And we're going to have Adrian Jacobs, who's an Indigenous leader, come and talk to us about how reconciliation can be part of this vision of land. And we're going to tell stories of development and have stakeholders there to answer questions. And so it's going to be a way of helping people imagine possibilities of using church land differently. Tim Kiffer has been involved in the planning of this is with the Mennonites, and so grateful for Tim's help in this too. There's an urgency, I think, to welcoming the most vulnerable around the table. Not just so that we avoid being like the guests in Jesus' parable, bystanders to what God is doing. But if we limit our care to only family and friends, we will help perpetuate the growing division between the rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots in our city. And I think that's part of the warning of this parable. The good news of this parable is that God is acting in our cities to bring together the most vulnerable and to provide places of care and welcome for them. The question for us is, how will we be a part of that? And which, of course, makes me wonder, what does it mean for this community, for your community, to be part of the welcome of God?